I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE in the Middle East in the week that the architect of Israel, Britain, finally announced it might recognize a Palestinian state as the UK finally suspended secret spy flights from Cyprus to facilitate the Holocaust. Intentions to join Jeremy Corbyn's new anti-genocide party, now beating all political parties in Britain, appears to have been the catalyst. Trump, for his part, for the first time, contradicted Netanyahu about starvation in Gaza that Trump himself enabled. But he continues to send US public money to Netanyahu, threaten Russia and Iran, and dissembled over Israeli intelligence asset Jeffrey Epstein. And he deployed US nuclear weapons to Britain. Joining me again from Washington, D.C. is one of the world's greatest journalists. He's editor-in-chief of The Gray Zone, co-director of Killing Gaza, and best-selling author of The 51-Day War, Ruin and Resistance in Gaza, and The Management of Savagery, Max Blumenthal. Max, thanks for coming back on the show. You know, every day in the Middle East, we've had headlines like this: in 21 months of carnage, over 60,000 Palestinians have died. And then suddenly, the New York Times has gone from "No, Israel is not committing genocide in Gaza" to finally a picture treating Palestinians as humans. Gazans are dying of starvation. I mean, is it the scale of this Holocaust that's rendered the Israeli propaganda useless? Or is there a change of emphasis amongst NATO elites that they're trying to do something differently? What's your take on this synchronized switch?
It's synchronized partly because Trump's in power. The Democrats, you can see in some kind of unison or issuing milquetoast statements, declaring that starvation is real, that humanitarian aid needs to be surged to Gaza. None of them will point the finger at who's responsible for this famine. None of them will tell us what needs to be done to exercise leverage over the culprit to force them to stop the killing. But they're acknowledging starvation because they, as the Democrats, as the New York Times, as the sort of liberal establishment, they ran cover for Israel and for the Biden administration for 18 months or so, pumping out bogus stories about Hamas mass rape on October 7th, about UNRWA having its staff participate in October 7th, as the Wall Street Journal did, bylined by Carrie Keller Lynn, who was actually a former IDF spokeswoman turned journalist. The Democrats in Congress, they never put forward ceasefire resolutions. They denounced ceasefire resolutions. The party elite, Hillary Clinton, called student protesters and anti-genocide protesters ignorant, useful idiots. They supported every single bill to deliver 2,000-pound baby buster bombs to Israel and waved the white flag before Netanyahu. And then there was Tony Blinken, who personally sabotaged every possible negotiation, along with Brett McGurk, who's now working, I think, for the Saudis. And what they did was they handed the baton off to Donald Trump and allowed him to take ownership of the genocide. And when Donald Trump came in, what did he do? He introduced the AI-rendered fantasy of a Gaza Riviera, which gave the green light for Israel to move.
After a brief ceasefire that showed that the president of the United States can create a ceasefire.
Right. He showed how much leverage the U.S. has over Israel, that, as we've been saying, they could just end this whole thing with one phone call. But the brief ceasefire turned into a moment for Israel to rearm, remobilize its reserve forces. And then it led to one of the many, what's known in Gaza as the Witkoff massacres, where the U.S. just betrays the Gaza delegation and Israel massacres them after they blow up the ceasefire. So then after the ceasefire was blown up, or the pause, Trump introduces the Gaza Riviera AI fantasy. Israel and especially the messianic fanatics in Netanyahu's coalition see this as carte blanche to launch the final solution. And now all of these Democratic Party elites, the New York Times, these institutions and figures who deeply care about their legacies and the judgment of history, see that Israel is actually racing ahead to a final solution As Israeli Heritage Minister Amichai Eliyahu explicitly said, we are racing ahead to clear out Gaza and we will make Gaza Jewish. And it's almost like they never thought this would take place. And they thought, oh, well, maybe Trump will do a ceasefire and then we'll all be saved from the condemnation of history and our own base, which hates us. And so now they are displaying in, as you said, synchronized fashion, retroactive morality. And the New York Times attempted with one photo to galvanize public opinion against the war, something they could have done months and months ago. They could have done it in November when Israel was, in November 2023, when Israel was destroying the whole of northern Gaza. But they waited until now, till a moment they thought was politically convenient, and showed an emaciated child on the cover. Very much like the girl whose nose was blown off by the Taliban. And yet it has failed to do anything except further deepen public, very justified, legitimate public hatred for Israel and Netanyahu.
Yeah, and the New York Times then making some kind of correction in the face of the New York Post and Fox News, the Rupert Murdoch press, and all across NATO nations, by the way. It's not just in the United States where people said, look, just like the Nazis did about the fact that the first to be killed in genocides are the disabled and those with pre-existing conditions. The New York Times somehow apologized?
Yeah, they issued this pathetic statement through a spokesperson, which has effectively ceded ground. I mean, when you give the Zionist lobby, the Israel lobby, an inch, they take a mile, and it's ceded enormous ground to them. And it seems like it set back all other New York Times reporting on this issue. And so let me just make two points about this. First, the mother of the child had already been interviewed, and nothing was hidden from the New York Times. Her name is, the child's name is Mohammed Zakaria Al-Mutawak. And the mother had declared that in December 2023, her son was born. So this is like 3 months or 2 months into the war, and he had no chronic illness. And then he was diagnosed with macrocephaly, which is, a chronic illness. And it was caused because the mother had nutritional deficiencies in her pregnancy because Israel was already blockading food. I mean, do you remember in January 2024, December 2023, there were already massacres of people trying to get flour in northern Gaza. And then throughout the war, they were displaced, and his condition worsened. This is all in the words of the mother on the record to the New York Times and other publications. Due to severe shortages of food, his condition became worse because of acute malnutrition. So Zionists have proven nothing by getting this admission that the child had a chronic illness in a famine, in an imposed famine or a Holocaust. It's always those who are afflicted with sickness who die first, which is why Nazi Germany often killed them first and took the stronger males and females to work camps. And, you know, in the film I did with Dan Cohen, Killing Gaza, we documented after the 2014 Israeli assault on Gaza, which was sort of a pilot program for the current genocide, how children were dying after that war due to deprivation in the cold. I mean, this has been happening for years in Gaza. This is nothing new. So I don't know why the New York Times would cede that ground, except that they're always so sensitive to Zionist pressure, and the Zionists are in the building. The ethno-supremacists are in the building, like Joe Kahn, who I believe is the executive editor. His father is a major Israel lobbyist. He's been associated with the Israel lobby. And what the press should be doing, the International Press Corps, the credentialed press, you know, who have credentials to go into every official institution, is be lining up on the Rafah border inside Egypt, setting up tents and putting pressure, not just on the Egyptian government, but on the Israelis, demanding to go into Gaza and just putting the pressure. There's never been a coherent pressure campaign on the Israeli government for journalists to go into Gaza. Once they get in and there are droves of journalists, not the courageous Palestinian journalists who've been targeted and had their heads blown off by Israeli drones, but like white people journalists with British accents and, you know, blow-dried hair like Richard Engel and those vests that have a million pockets in them, those kinds of journalists. Once they're in there, the whole thing ends.
Except
they're going to show the world that Israel's lying.
Except, Max, they're not going to do that. And if you read The Management of Savagery, your book, which takes such an international perspective on this, which is full of instances, I don't know, probably from Tierra del Fuego to Hanoi to Jakarta, I don't know, in the book, of where journalists don't do journalism. They do the work of the empire, the US empire. Have you ever seen anything like this, though, what we're seeing today? I mean, it's the anniversary of the Treblinka uprising in 1943, when those imprisoned by the Nazis rose up against them. Have you ever seen journalism like you're seeing now? You just mentioned the synchronicity of the sudden discovery that after 20 months, there's genocide. Anything like this? All those people in all the newsrooms from Berlin to San Francisco to New York, London, Paris, all these NATO powers. What sort of people are they?
Yeah, they're waiting for instructions, and many of them are actually intelligence assets. Their job is to be stenographers for imperial power. And I mentioned Richard Engel. I think during the Syria Dirty War, he reported that he had been kidnapped by the Assad regime and Assad's goons, but it turned out it was actually CIA-sponsored Free Syrian Army goons who kidnapped him and staged a false flag in order to implicate Assad. Then you have, you know, CNN's top international correspondent, Clarissa Ward. You'll never find her doing anything that hasn't been signed off on by some intelligence agency or the State Department or UK Foreign Office. And where is she right now? She would, in the Syrian Dirty War, would actually embed. She broke away from Damascus, broke the Syrian government's law, and embedded with actual jihadist fighters and painted them as these heroic revolutionaries. Those are the same forces in power now that are massacring minorities across Syria, carrying out some of the worst sectarian massacres outside of Israel. So that's essentially who they are. But, you know, what I've never seen before with Gaza is such a clear textbook case that demands military intervention. There needs to be a military intervention against Israel, and the rail lines to Auschwitz need to be bombed because we're witnessing a Holocaust. And that's the only thing that can stop this. But who's being nominated by world governments and world leaders, including Netanyahu, for the Nobel Prize? It is the chief sponsor right now of the Gaza Holocaust, Donald Trump. And where are the intellectual authors of the Responsibility to Protect doctrine, which introduce this whole concept of military intervention?
Hang on, Max. We'll leave that as hanging on for part two. Max Mumenthal, I'm going to stop you there. More from the editor-in-chief of The Gray Zone and the answer to that question after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the founder and editor-in-chief of The Gray Zone, Max Blumenthal. Max, you were talking about the intellectual author and intellectuals in general and their responses to a genocide live-streamed.
Yeah, Samantha Power is who I'm referring to mainly. Samantha Power cut her teeth as a correspondent at The New Yorker, delivering these Orwell-style dispatches of the horrors unfolding in the former Yugoslavia, which the NATO empire sought to dismantle, Srebrenica, all of the horrible massacres by the Serbian forces. Then Samantha Power enters government in the Obama administration, is pushing Obama constantly to initiate military action against the Syrian government, to the point where Obama told her to shut up and get out of his face because she was lobbying him so stringently. This was her mission in life, the R2P doctrine. We have a responsibility to protect the weak, which we failed to do during Rwanda. According to Samantha Power's book, A Problem from Hell, these key Clinton figures, Susan Rice, sat on their hands and let a new Holocaust unfold. And then Samantha Power is vaulted into an even more important or pivotal position in the Biden administration, USAID director. And in that position, she focuses almost exclusively on Ukraine, on directing our money as US taxpayers to pay pensioners and teachers, basically prop up the Ukrainian state so it can assail Russia. And then the Gaza Holocaust comes around and Samantha Power, the most she can do is take selfies of herself in USAID warehouses in Jordan, of herself frowning with USAID aid that's just sitting there because Israel won't let it in. They were starving Gaza right away. And where is Samantha Power now as starvation stalks the entire population?
She did criticize the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, but she didn't get singled out by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation like you personally did, Max.
It was such a meek condemnation or criticism that it didn't even register. Just like Barack Obama, who'd kept silent all this time as he held forth on Michelle Obama's podcast that no one watches about how your son needs a gay mentor in case he turns out to be non-binary and how people who eat ketchup are better people. He was finally shamed into saying something about Gaza. It shows you just how these people are so vain and narcissistic and exist in their own bubble, and they don't, you know, sit around the dinner table before they eat and pray for the children of Gaza. They don't feel it the way so many people I know are feeling it. Well, for me, I never know when I'm going to wake up to some kind of coordinated attack, but you mentioned that the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation attacked me or singled me out. It's, you know, another proud moment. Usually when I get attacked, it's for something I'm proud of and not like, having to answer for Jeffrey Epstein taking away my spa staff to his island, like the president. And all I did was participate in exposing the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation as an Israeli intelligence-sponsored, U.S.-fronted operation that is part of Israel's final solution, has helped replace the effective UN system that fed Gaza, its population of refugees, and is now being used as the basis for a future concentration camp in southern Gaza, as the Israeli defense minister, Israel Katz, has announced. So the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation has lots of money. Money from USAID, which was gutted by Trump, is now being directed into GHF, which means we, the US taxpayers, are funding this criminal operation. According to Israeli opposition figures like Avigdor Lieberman, Israel's Mossad has put up a lot of money for it. A former US mercenary who was contracted to protect or provide security at one of the GHF sites, Anthony Aguilar, has said that the key stakeholder for GHF is the Israeli army. And it's run by an assortment of, you know, Trump cronies like Reverend Johnny Moore and former CIA field operatives like Phil Riley. So they hired this Israel lobby group called the National Contagion Research Institute, NCRI, to write this report filled with all this fake data, claiming that all of the bad press GHF is getting, where over 1,000 people have been killed trying to get food at their sites, killed by the Israeli army, which is turning these aid sites into shooting galleries, that all the bad press is the result of a Hamas-run propaganda campaign. And I show up as one of the journalists who's somehow controlled by Hamas for tweeting bad things about GHF. It's just simply pathetic. I don't know what this report itself is, the scandal. And it's being run out of a institute at Rutgers University. So what's going on there? I mean, this is a gigantic scandal, and it's unfolding in my own country and in my own community in Northern Virginia. there was a protest at the home of the CEO of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, just a few miles from where I am, because people are recognizing, even here, that this, I mean, these are the Eichmanns in our community. These are our little Eichmanns.
Well, away from the Holocaust, which of course means that if you deny it, you're a Holocaust denier, Russia. I mean, on Monday, we were talking to Ari Ben-Menashe, the former Israeli intelligence asset who was the source for the Samson option by Cy Hirsch, who tells us that Trump does want peace around the world, but he's they've got information, and he says it categorically. They're trying to pressure him as regards what's happening in Gaza. In Russia, he's now deflecting, if anything, from Epstein with a 10-day deadline. What do you think how Russia is going to respond to Trump, and why is he sending nuclear weapons to Britain, to England?
Yeah, this is disturbing, and it's another show of force by the Trump administration. It shows how malleable Trump is, how he's easily overwhelmed by the osmosis of the deep state that he claimed to fight against. It's another reason why the Epstein scandal has so much force among Trump's own base, because they're beginning to see him as someone who's actually aligned with the deep state, because Epstein has become kind of a catch-all for all of the Trump betrayals, including his betrayal of those who voted for him because they thought he would make peace in Ukraine. So he's extending the war because Putin won't do what he wants. Because why would Russia do what Donald Trump wants if Trump is advancing the Kellogg formula, which is a 60-day pause, freezing the lines? When Russia's advancing, Russia's winning, and the 60 days would allow Zelensky and the Ukrainian military to remobilize
at a time when Zelensky's own government. It might not be Zelensky by the time this is broadcast. Of course.
Right.
You mentioned Kellogg there.
I was told to be general. I mean, Zelensky's own government is in serious crisis now. So this is another reason why negotiations on Trump's terms are not necessary for Russia.
So Tulsi Gabbard is there to get all the Russia hoax material, much of it exposed by the gray zone, and I'd say by going underground at the time. She's just relegated to explaining all of that and hopefully indictments to the people who lied to the U.S. public about trying to subvert U.S. democracy. But it's Kellogg that gives Trump all the information on a war that could be the war to end all, not all wars, but end all humanity, the Ukraine proxy war.
Yeah, Tulsi Gabbard's not in the room. Tulsi Gabbard wasn't in the room in the days before the Trump administration elected to bomb Iran. Susie Wiles, the chief of staff, who it turns out actually literally worked for Benjamin Netanyahu on his 2020 campaign, kept Tulsi out in order for CENTCOM chief Michael Kurilla, who's known as Israel's favorite general, a complete tool for the Israeli defense ministry, and John Ratcliffe, the totally unqualified CIA director who is referred to as a Mossad stenographer by other Trump staffers, were briefing Trump on behalf of Israel. And so Tulsi Gabbard's been kept out of the room on Ukraine as well. And it looks like her main role is just to finesse intelligence and documents in order to defend Trump's political imperatives and keep his base happy. And everything was fine. You know, she completely manipulated intelligence on behalf of Trump in order to justify the 1798 Alien Insurrection Act or Alien Enemies Act, where basically she had to declare that a defunct, extinct Venezuelan gang called Tren de Aragua was actually being run in the United States as a transnational cartel directly by Nicolas Maduro in order to justify the mass deportation of all Venezuelans, including to like a torture camp in El Salvador. Tulsi was just doing whatever Trump wanted. And once again, she is helping to save Trump's skin with this Russiagate deflection. And then, yeah, as you said, at the Gray Zone, we've been covering Russiagate. It was a complete hoax. Aaron Maté has demonstrated this again and again. And what Tulsi Gabbard has released does implicate retired intelligence chiefs, James Clapper, John Brennan, and many other figures in the Democratic
Party.
Sorry, Max,
we're running out of time a bit. You don't hear any of this.
Well, what is new here?
Yeah.
The question is, what is new here? And you know, that's what I don't know what's new here. It really does seem like a deflection from the very real scandal that for some reason the Democrats never brought up against Trump because so much of their leadership was invested and involved in it, which is the Epstein scandal. And the Epstein scandal does also go deep into implicating the intelligence services, including those of at least intelligence adjacent figures in Israel.
Well, just finally, if Zelensky, like we were talking about, is gone and replaced with Zaluzhny, is the next most immediate, even before the 10-day expiry date, most immediate prospect of conflict, though, another bombing of Iran by Trump to deflect against Epstein? All of this eventually encroaching towards China.
Well, remember, Zaluzhny is the guy who was blamed for the Nord Stream pipeline explosions. So that would be interesting. He's been taking English lessons, I hear. And with respect to Iran, now, I said before, Iran did not fully establish deterrence with during its 12-day war with Israel, and it was caught on the back foot. We're learning a lot about new damage that Iran exacted on Israeli infrastructure, including totally disabling the Haifa gas facility, which is making it hard for Israel to actually refuel its own transportation fleet. The damage is much deeper than we knew. And I don't think at this point Israel wants to get involved in another exchange with Iran. So I don't see that happening. I would be shocked if it happened. And I can also tell you that in Iran, from my contacts there, there is a sense that Iran should have kept going. And they're increasingly blaming the reformist government of Mahmoud Pezeshkian and his hunger for negotiations with the US for stopping a war that they believed they were winning, that Israel could not have withstood a war of attrition against Iran. So I don't really see the US going back in at this immediate point.
But, even though
this could be one of my most embarrassing moments, but
though the IAEA actually just did another one of those anti-Iran reports, but well, let's hope there's not war while this is being broadcast. Clearly, but Max Blumenthal, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Afshin.
That's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those suffering NATO nation-linked bombing of Gaza, Yemen, Syria, Lebanon, Iran, and Iraq. We'll be back on Monday with a former Israeli military intelligence official who claims Israel is trying to blackmail Trump using Epstein files to continue the genocide in Gaza. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.